You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. As white supremacists marched in Charlottesville, some carried shields and a flag with a slightly modified Detroit Red Wings logo. It's believed they were part of a group that calls itself the Detroit Right Wings. And that got us thinking about Michigan and its history with extremist groups. It bears examining when you consider that the number of violent attacks in this country inspired by far-right extremist ideologies has risen to more than 300 a year. That's according to a study done by West Point. Here with us is historian Joellen Vineyard from Eastern Michigan University. She's the author of Right in Michigan's Grassroots, From the KKK to the Michigan Militia. When did we first see right-wing extremism come to Michigan, and in what form?
Well, the most recent form of the militia came to attention in 1994 when they saw men in camouflage marching and training. And then the Free Press and other areas picked it up and said, well, what's going on in Michigan? It's a cauldron of hate. It's always been a place of hateful right-wing extremists. So that's what prompted this book.
So we go back then.
We go back.
Decades.
Really way back even into the 19th century when farmers tore up railroad lines and Detroiters, some of them tore up the railroad lines because the railroad was coming through their neighborhoods or scaring the cows. And so there's been this sort of citizen participation and, you know, let's take charge. But the 20th century, the first real group that emerges is the Ku Klux Klan. And it's a reborn Klan, not like the Reconstruction Klan, not like the one that came more recently.
In the 60s. But when we talk, are we talking about the fact that the Great Migration
That's
brought
right.
black workers right. up from the South?
Exactly.
Looking for auto jobs.
That's right. That was the time when there were, in 1920, somebody estimated 1,000 blacks were arriving in Detroit every week. So the population was undergoing great upheaval, along with World War I that had just ended. And so that helps explain it. The economy was really struggling.
And how much of a foothold did the KKK get?
The KKK had more members in Michigan than in any state in the South in the 20s. It was a big group. And it wasn't just Michigan. Indiana had an even larger group and the head of the National Klan. Michigan probably, it's so hard to get a figure exactly, but I would guess that one out of every 10 people eligible to belong to the Klan, which meant you really had to be white, Anglo-Saxon, Protestant, probably one out of 10 belonged. If you take into account women who also formed their own group, and they had a group for children.
When we think of Klan activities in Michigan in the 20s, what did that look like? Because certainly people have that Reconstruction era Southern idea of them riding in on horseback. But what was going on in Michigan?
They rode in Model Ts. That was on their card when they applied for membership. It said, do you have a car and how many people will it seat? Because they needed cars to take people to rallies. So the automobile made it possible for them to organize in groups, and they would gather in farm areas right south Oakland County outside of Detroit, but across the state. They were spread throughout the state. It was not just a local urban phenomenon.
And what kind of crimes?
They burned crosses. That was the most visible. That was the first sign that they were in the neighborhood and organizing. They burned crosses on the highest hill. They boycotted Jewish, Catholic businesses. There was not a lot of, you know, outlandish, evil killing here like there was in the South.
The lynchings.
Right. The lynchings, we have a very few. Some might have gone unreported. But more than that, they were protesters, and they saw themselves as American patriots. That's one of the key things.
You mentioned they kind of waned and then rose again in the 60s, which I guess we need to address the fact that there was Pastor Bob Miles of Howell,
right,
who died 25 years ago this month. But he was, what, Grand Dragon of the Michigan Ku Klux Klan?
He was. He's the one who was involved in the Pontiac bus bombing. At the time when judge ruled that Pontiac schools were segregated and they were going to have to bus students within, and then it moved on to cross-district busing as the next phase. But Miles was one with a group of friends who bombed the Pontiac buses in 1971. And he also was involved with his group in tarring and feathering the principal at Willow Run High School, who was trying to peacefully integrate the high school. He was a white man, and he was trying to peacefully integrate the high school, and they grabbed him, tarred and feathered him. And for the bombing and the tar and feathering, Miles went to prison for, I think, 7 years.
And even though he died 25 years ago, does his reputation and the fact that he was the grand dragon of the Michigan Klan, does that still hang over Howell?
It does. Howell has fought to get free from that, and it's not fair to label all of Howell as, you know, people involved in his version of the Klan. But their efforts so far, you know, have not worked out. That's all people remember about Howell.
I'm speaking with historian Joellen Vineyard, the author of Right in Michigan's Grassroots, From the KKK to the Michigan Militia. When the Klan in the 20s was burning crosses, one cross they burned was at 12 Mile Road in Woodward in Royal Oak in Oakland County. And that's when a Catholic priest named Father Charles Coughlin was setting up his new parish, the Shrine of the Little Flower. Anyone who drives by that corner sees that enormous church and that enormous stone crucifix that towers over that northeast corner of 12 Mile and Woodward, because Father Coughlin said, I'm going to build a cross that can never burn down. However, this is the priest who had a huge national radio audience throughout the Depression. Some call him the founder of hate radio. Let's take a quick listen to Father Coughlin in full-throated action before a cheering crowd.
We are Christian insofar as we believe in Christ's principle of love your neighbor as yourself. And with that principle, I challenge every Jew in this nation to tell me that he does not believe in it.
So, tell us about Father Coughlin's radio program, which was listened to in homes across America during the Depression.
It had the biggest radio following of any program proportionally then or now. The Klan came in the Model T that powered them, and the radio was just new when Father Coughlin came to Detroit. And he struck up a friendship with someone in the radio world, and they decided initially he was going to broadcast catechism lessons, Bible stories for children. And then it morphed on, and it grew bigger after the Depression hit. He started at 26, 27, he's starting. When the Depression hit in Michigan by 29, and actually it hit here earlier than elsewhere, he then started to segue into economic issues and part of social justice issues. He was, in the outset, he was a major force for social justice. He believed that people should not be accumulating these vast amounts of wealth while others had none. And he really had a very advanced version of what the government should do, which is what brought him to the attention of Franklin Roosevelt. Coughlin was a good friend, first of Frank Murphy. And at that time, Murphy had been in various political positions, and Murphy knew Roosevelt. So that was the connection between Coughlin and Roosevelt. But Roosevelt saw that Coughlin had a big audience, a Catholic audience, that would serve him well in the elections. So Coughlin went to the convention in Chicago in 32, and he gave a speech. He was a very important cog in Roosevelt's whole operation. And then he didn't think Roosevelt moved fast enough, and so his sermons and his statements on radio started to get more and more harsh. And as that happened, of course, Roosevelt got more and more angry. First, he'd been calling the New Deal was Christ's deal. Then, within a while, he's saying the New Deal is the devil's deal. So then there was a rupture. And besides, Roosevelt didn't need him anymore. By 36, he didn't need Coughlin because he had that solid base.
So how did it evolve where there's this impression that Father Coughlin was against Jews and friendly to Hitler?
He was.
Yeah. How did that morph? So it's not just an impression.
It's not just a myth. The thing he was above all was Christian. And that explains his anti-Jewish attitudes and his support for Hitler. Besides that, he was against communism as the mortal enemy of Christianity and Catholicism. And he saw Hitler as standing as a bulwark against Russia. Communist Russia was his real nemesis.
So if awful things happen to Jews in Germany, oh well.
That's right.
Wow. I want to play the beginning of one of Father Coughlin's weekly radio addresses from 1938 and listen to the 1938 version of complaining about fake news.
We present at this time the regular Sunday afternoon address of Father Charles E. Coughlin from Royal Oak, Michigan.
Good afternoon, my friends. Following last Sunday's broadcast, a vicious campaign of misrepresentation, based upon fancy and not upon fact, has been carried on not only against me, but against the cause I represent. They were centered upon the following unjustifiable accusations. 1. Coughlin attacks Jews in the most un-American speech ever delivered. 2. Coughlin defends Nazism and the Nazi pogroms, which means mass murder.
When you hear that...
Right. It's eerie.
Yeah.
I don't know that he really ever... defended things like the pogroms. I don't know. In his speeches, I don't remember that as appearing. He was, interestingly enough, and I think this is a parallel in each one of these groups, he gave cover to people who shared his same ideas but who couldn't dare be vocal about it. So people who were already anti-Semitic could say, well, I'm not a Coughlinite. Listen to him. And the same thing had happened with the Klan. They gave cover to people who were anti-immigrant, anti-Catholic, anti-Jewish, anti-Black. And so that's the really deadly part about these groups. They gave cover, and because they were so extreme, they made the centrists, toward the right centrists, look like normal people. They made them look like they were really okay. And it happens in every one of these time periods.
And here we go
again.
And
here we are.
And we should note, Father Coughlin was finally muzzled by church authorities.
He was. Yes. They took away his broadcast in 1941, right after Pearl Harbor was bombed. FBI trucks, Army trucks came up to the shrine and loaded up all kinds of materials and took it back to Washington. It's very difficult. I found it more difficult to research Coughlin and find anything new than these other groups, because a lot of his papers are buried someplace. And the archdiocese, if they have them, they don't share.
Well, we also know that there have been groups such as the John Birch Society in Michigan, the Black Legion, and of course you began by talking about the Michigan Militia. A little about those groups, John Birch Society.
The John Birch Society comes right out of the Cold War era. Its biggest issue is fear of communism, defense of America. They were people who supported Barry Goldwater, extremism and defense of liberty is no vice in 64. And the Birch Society is never as big as the Klan by any means, or certainly not the Coughlin followers. But the Birch Society was more middle class and even some upper class people who were dedicated to getting together and studying and being almost in cells, like the communists that they so hated, so that they could give factual information and they would report on people as being dangerous. The Birch Society has endured. I mean, they are still out there, but their numbers aren't much greater. But what they did was they were like a phalanx inside the Republican Party. And they made a very strong stand as a minority within the Republican Party, which was sort of a cacophony of various interest groups. And so they were able to have a great deal of influence.
And the Black Legion.
And the Black Legion, I didn't cover them in this book because I was looking at groups that really are grassroots-based. The Black Legion is more like the present-day Klan in that they're a hate group who just like to kill people and damage them. And they were in Detroit, and they did commit some murders. They were white supremacists. They were a fearsome group, but a tiny group of thugs, really.
Terrorists.
Yeah,
domestic terrorists.
They were.
And the Michigan Militia, that's more recent. We certainly saw a big burst in the 90s, but they're not gone.
They're not gone. The Michigan Militia is an umbrella name for various groups. They aren't unified. There is no real solid Michigan militia. They tried that, but they could never get the factions all together. So what it is local groups, local brigades breaking, apart and with local leaders. And they worked together sometimes. They fought, but they also worked together. And what their concern was to protect the country from within. They were afraid that our leaders had been duped. They emerged at the time of Ruby Ridge, Waco. Clinton was president. They hated Clinton. The Monica Lewinsky affair, they were appalled, even though some of them were divorced and admitted to having affairs. They said, well, not in the Oval Office. So they're emerging like the other groups in their time.
We're going to be ready to protect our
That's
own
right.
from the government.
That's exactly. They were afraid the government would march on them.
Now, you are eager to make a point that Michigan has been a fertile breeding ground for extremist thought on the left as well.
That's right. That's another book if I wanted to ever get to it, or somebody else should. Because at the same time we have these groups on the right, we've had a very strong group on the left, and it starts right here in Ann Arbor. And always, all along, Teddy Roosevelt won in Michigan with the progressive vote when he ran in 1912. He won Michigan. So there have been progressive movements and efforts all along across the 20th century, the union movement. And some within the union movement are really at the far left end. The IWW had its headquarters in Detroit in the early part of the 20th century. You know, right on up through all of these years, there have been corresponding left-wing groups.
Would you say today, as we talk in 2017, looking at this history leading up to now, where would you put Michigan, Joellen, in terms of extremist or hate group activity? I know it's so much of it is underground.
Right. Right now, the Southern Poverty Law Center says Michigan has 28 hate groups that they have charted, which is a lot compared to others. Ohio has more, but Ohio is a bigger state. Wisconsin has fewer. So Michigan, throughout its history, really, from its founding, it's at the forefront of changes and developments that are happening nationwide. It's often a leader or very involved at the beginning. I mean, if you think back, we had the copper and iron ore industrialized companies and factories well before many other places. Then we've got the auto industry. And so we're always at the forefront. We go into the Rust Belt early on, too.
So our economy has great highs and great lows. Does that make us more susceptible,
Michiganers? It makes people very fearful. You know, you can get rich, but you can lose it all too here. You can find the American dream or it will be dust at your feet.
And then when that happens, you go looking for someone to blame.
You do. You have to find somebody to blame. And the trouble is with all these groups, you know, they come and go, but they leave an impression or a legacy within the community, because they really got a lot of these ideas from within the community anyhow, but they leave a lasting legacy that then gets codified. It gets built into law. In the 20s, we get immigration quotas. In the 30s, we get Roosevelt's programs. We get anti-communism at its peak here in the 60s and 70s. And so all along, these people are at the forefront of nationwide movements. And although they're small and they seem like kooks to some others, but they have a big lasting impact. And that's what's so frightening.
Well, our thanks so much to Eastern Michigan University history professor Joellen Vineyard for talking with us. Her book is Right in Michigan's Grassroots, From the KKK to the Michigan Militia. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.